Caruso, welcome to another podcast, Peldroid. On 15th of March, Rich and I, Russell, spoke with Rafael Geller, the Israeli sports journalist, about the Israel-Wales clash in Tel Aviv at the end of March. Rafael kindly shared his insights and knowledge about the Israeli squad and the campaign to date with us. Many Welsh friends will be familiar with him through social media or listening to his coverage online, and possibly even been fortunate enough to meet up with him in Tel Aviv for the game itself. Rafael kindly accepted the invitation to chat with us again, and to record another podcast looking back on both the Israel-Wales clash but also their game with Belgium that took place 4 days later in Jerusalem. So here is Russell speaking with Rafael Geller on 7th of April. And I started off by asking him how he felt the two games had gone.
I think we went into it with very high expectations that at the time I think were realistic. I think maybe now that we played the matches, we realized maybe they weren't. But the bigger surprise for me was the result in the Wales match, because, you know, no disrespect to Wales, but I don't think that Wales is, you know, way, way better than Israel. And that result was, a result that shows how good Israel is. I think our manager made a very big mistake and assumed that he could play the same guys that destroyed Bosnia and have the same kind of results against a country, like Bosnia, you know, not a world-class team, but a very, very good team. And I think if you read some of my tweets from the match, after 12 minutes of the match, I knew we were going to lose.
Really?
Yeah, I knew we were going to lose because I could tell the players that were on the pitch for our side were not exactly sure what they were doing. I think they were pretty much directed all week to be ready for a kind of approach like Bosnia. That never came. The players gave way too much space, not even to your big players, not even Gareth Bale and Aaron Ramsey, but basically everyone got way too much time to dribble. There wasn't any pressure. I think that our manager didn't think that guys on your team, like, you know, Ashley Williams, could make a great pass. You know, a lot of your guys play in the Premier League, and if not the Premier League, then the Championship. But it was very disappointing. I really, you know, the red card obviously did not help.
Yeah.
And this is really the bottom line. Luckily, Israel got off to a very, very good start, and other teams such as, well, no, you guys are not a good example, but Bosnia, Belgium, and I guess you could say Cyprus because they've lost a couple, but they didn't get off to an amazing start. But really, I'm looking here at Bosnia and Belgium. And because Bosnia and Belgium didn't get off to a good start, we're more than alive. It doesn't look like it right now with us in third place with 9 points. But anyone who watched the Belgian match, and I'm guessing a lot of your listeners did just because it was really the only thing on TV Tuesday night if you wanted to watch football, we played very well. I know we lost. I know I don't believe in moral victories. I never have and I never will. But we played very well. Belgium scored in the first 10 minutes. And basically after that, they didn't have that many opportunities. We figured out how to contain Hazard. He got very tired, if you notice. He came off because he's tired. We marked him really well. We weren't afraid. We looked very different. And there's one reason for that. One reason, and the main reason was we decided that we were not going to play the same type of match that we played against Bosnia. We realized that's not going to work anymore. That was a one-time thing. We can't just go with the same tactics. And what he did, our manager, in an entire new, not starting 11, because you still had some of the main guys in the core, but he made four major changes, and these changes, it's complicated, but if you ask a lot of Israelis, a lot of people would say that these guys who started against Belgium probably should have started against Wales, but our manager decided to go with, as I said, about 20 times with very similar tactics to the Bosnia match, which we won. So in this match, he decided to bring in Ben Sahar, who, a lot of people remember because he played for Chelsea and played for lots of different teams in England on the wing. As a striker, he decided to put in Tomer Chemed. It was funny talking to you know, you guys on Twitter and everything, and then to a lot of the Welsh media that came here, the big name that everyone was talking about was Omer Damari. And I don't know if you remember this, but I was one of the people who said, you can't start a guy who hasn't scored a goal since November, suffered through mononucleosis, which for people who don't know is probably one of the worst autoimmune diseases you can get, and then a guy who's really struggled in Germany, which, you know, some people on Twitter said to me, how could a guy in the second division Germany team be such a star? And really quickly, the answer is because he's on a team that has the highest budget in the league and a team that in a year or two could very easily be in the top four of the first division and be in the Champions League. So that's why he's such a big name here. What I'm trying to say is our manager put in new players in new positions. Nir Bitton also played kind of central midfield, defensive central midfield role that, you know, I'm going to take care of the field. And he was fantastic. A lot of people said he was man of the match. I think Fellaini ended up winning it just because I think he scored the goal. But he was definitely the man of the match for Israel. Basically, I know I've been talking a lot, but really to end real quick, the addition of Ben Sarr on the wing, Tomer Chemed up front, and Nir Bitton, and even Rami Gershon in the defense was very big. And I think in the match in September, which is a very tough match for both teams since you don't really know if your players are in form because some leagues just recently started. Depends what the player is doing in the offseason and in the summer. So those September matches are very, especially it's the first week of September, we come to Cardiff. That's a very strange match because some of the major leagues don't start till mid-August or late August, or even some start at the beginning of September. So it's kind of unclear to know who's in form.
I mean, one thing for you to bear in mind then in respect to that is we are notoriously slow starters at the start of a season. And without the August friendly date, I think as FIFA have done away with that, under pressure from leagues, we don't get a game to get a little bit of rustiness. So that historically, that August friendly date, we've lost at home to Australia, we've lost at home to Georgia, we've struggled to beat the likes of sort of Slovenia, Bulgaria. I mean, it's a real difficult game for us. Lost at home to Bosnia. I mean, never even really got close to them. So we've got to come into that with very little preparation. Again, as you say, only 3 weeks of the season, the English Premier League season has started. So that might give you a little bit of heart. But I think it's interesting, going back to what you're saying about which selection he made and tactics, Gutmann now. There was a really telling comment in Chris Coleman's, either the press conference or speaking to one of the reporters, where he said that Israel played exactly as they expected you to, which I thought was really, really telling, because Coleman's been getting a lot of praise and his team for the way they tactically set out for that game. And it appears that, you know, whatever homework they had done, and there's a chap called Oshin Roberts who's in his who's part of Coleman's backroom team. He also holds a role as sort of like the technical director for the Football Association of Wales. Very, very, you know, highly qualified, very, very tactically aware. And that's pretty much his role, is to assess and identify and analyse the tactics that our opponents are adopting. And he came out and said Coleman played exactly as we expected. And I think that reflected good quality preparation and perhaps a little bit of, I don't know, I think on our part over here, it was either maybe conservative of Gutmann, so not to want to change things, or possibly a little bit arrogant.
Oh, let me follow up on that. But yes, very arrogant. Listen, a tie was not a good result for us. Everyone thought we should win. We beat Bosnia easily. Why we should be able to beat Wales easily. No one saw this coming. So yeah, I think it's okay to say that he was a bit arrogant in his tactics.
But there were a few things that didn't seem to go well for you, because I mean, Damari went off just before half time. Then we scored in added time. TB went off. I mean, you know, I felt sorry for him because I don't know if there was much else he could do. But he picks up two very, very quick yellow cards. You know, we score from the resulting free kick. This is the sort of luck that actually Welsh fans tend to think, you know, only happens to us. It's the sort of, you know, calamitous way a game turns out that we're all far too familiar with. So it was quite novel for us to just be really quite comfortable, I felt, all the way through. Rich has asked me to raise a question about you seem to lack a lot of drive and a lot of energy in midfield in particular. Was there any reason that, you know, you've identified the selection, you know, was it anything else, do you think?
you said it, the Tibby thing. Who camps two yellow cards in 2 minutes? I mean, I don't think I've ever seen that happen in a match before. I mean, that's very rare. The second one, as you kind of hinted, he had to do, because if he didn't do it, there's a good chance that Gareth Bale was going to score. Whoever, I forget who he fouled. I think it was Bale. But then,
yeah,
of course,
yeah, it was Bale twice.
Giving Gareth Bale that kind of free kick, you know, I'll tell you what, everyone in the stadium put on their iPhones and he's going to score here. And he did. And at that point, it was done. It was over much, much more before that. But that was the biggest blow you could get, is to have a red card and then immediately get that kind of position for Gareth Bale to score. But I think something really important, actually my father was watching the game at home, told me, which wasn't talked a lot about here in the media, is what would have happened if we went into halftime with Ramsey not scoring that goal, because that really kind of took the, I don't know what the good word in English, the umph out of the crowd. And if you watch the goal, and I've watched it a million times, it was terrible,
yeah,
terrible goalkeeping. I mean, our goalkeeper is tall. Okay, but it looks as if it was this really perfect header, but it was a good header, not taking away from it, but Marciano was way far too out, and then it was too late, so then he had to jump up, but that should have been an easy, if he was in the right place, that should have been stopped. And that was a very disappointing, because then, you know, you go in at halftime with 1-0, 1-0, and suddenly Israel has a lot of pressure to score to tie it, and we didn't come out, you know, we didn't come out with any really excitement. The thing that was interesting is Tomer Chemed came in the 44th minute, Nir Bitton came in the 60th minute, Ben Sarr came around the 70th minute. Those guys should have started. I mean, I think it's interesting you said that Domari came out and you guys, I don't know if you were happy about that. To make clear, I'm never happy when a player gets injured. But I was happy that Domari was coming out, because I was like, watching him on the field, he looks tired. He doesn't look prepared. He hasn't scored a goal in 5 months. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is supposed to be a guy who was sold to a club for something like 7 million euro, which, you know, you're a small country too. I know you have Gareth Bale and Joe Allen and Aaron Ramsey. Those guys aren't good examples. But basically, you understand, for a country of size, for a player to get sold for something like 7 million euro is a lot of money. It's like, you know, he was the fourth most expensive transfer in the history of Israeli football, and the most expensive in a while since Ben Ayoun back in the day. But he was terrible, and I think everyone said, like, was thinking deep down, okay, you know, he's the leading goal. This is a fun stat. He was the leading goal scorer in Euro qualifiers going into this match with Danny Welbeck with 5 goals. So there's no way you can't start him. But then once he came off, I think people were like, oh, okay, maybe we should have started him because, you know, Chemed is doing a better job. So that was a big thing. I mean, literally everything went wrong. That's really the theme of this game.
Yeah, and that I think from where we were watching the game, from our perspective, I think that was quite clear as well, as we were watching it, thinking, hang on, nothing is going right here for this team. And I thought, you know, we wondered, after we'd spoken to you, Rich and I, the first time, and then the rest of our lot got together and we recorded something looking ahead to the game. And one of the things that occurred to us was the way you were talking about playing at a high tempo, wanting to play sort of almost like a pressing game, I think, from, you know, up front, because you conceded that your defence, you know, isn't great. I think, you know, I remember you describing it as average when we spoke before. And we wondered whether is that going to put a little bit of space between Sunni defence and attack and maybe a couple of the midfielders? And is that going to play into our hands so we're able to be able to counter-attack? And with the pace of the likes of Bale, Robson Kanu as well, and we've got players like Ramsey, like Allen, who can pick a pass and can make use of that space. And that's what we thought would perhaps be the general approach. I mean, I appreciate, you know, in terms of tactics, there's, you know, it's much more finer detail, there's more nuances to that. And that's what we wondered was going to happen. And for us, pretty much after that first sort of 10, 15 minutes of just kind of testing each other out, both sides, that's pretty much how it went for us. And I think every time, certainly when we've gone 2-0 up, every time Bale had the ball and was running at you, the defence appeared terrified. And we, if I'm honest, and it's very, very rare that we say this against anybody, let alone a team, you know, a decent team like yourselves, we were disappointed that it wasn't possibly four or five.
That's embarrassing to hear. But.
And we weren't expecting that. We genuinely weren't. And I go back to your point about Damari. I think when he went off, because I think that was the player that most Welsh fans were aware of in terms of the campaign, and obviously the likes of you know, Tal Ben-Haim and others were aware of, were conscious of. But in terms of Damari in this campaign, he was the one we were thinking, okay, he's going to be possibly a bit of a danger. And so he went off, and for us to score almost immediately, seemed to be a real sucker punch for you.
It's funny you mentioned real quick that you should have scored more goals, because I always usually watch a game on TV after I'm at the game, because you can see, it's funny, you can see a lot more things on TV than you can sometimes there. And Tal Ben-Haim, the defender that is from you know, his days at Chelsea, Portsmouth, so on, saved two goals.
Yeah.
So you're very right. It could have easily been 5-0, because I'm 100% positive that if he didn't make those tackles on the two goals that are in my head right now, or excuse me, the two shots, those would have been 100% goals, because I think it was either Ramsey or Bell right in front of the goal. The only way they missed that is with us getting lucky, and he made those stops, and he's not a young man. He's going to turn 34 very soon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's, you know, that's very interesting.
And
for
and James Collins should have opened the scoring on, I think it was about 19, 20 minutes.
Oh yeah, I forgot. He was literally right in front of the. I mean, that was one of the worst misses I've seen. But in the end, it really didn't matter. That's the sad part.
You can see why. I can remember James Collins coming through as a youngster at Cardiff City, and you can see why he was converted from a striker to a centre half, can't you? I remember him playing some games up front when he first came through, but
he was good as a centre back. He was big, he was strong. He was kind of, you know, your Tal Ben-Haim, obviously very similar positions, and he was good.
He's missed a lot of games for Wales over the years, James Collins. He had a big falling out with Chris Coleman just a couple of seasons ago. He's missed a lot of games for Wales, and the really disappointing thing, and this is something that we've touched on when we've done our other podcasts, when you look at Ashley Williams has missed, he had his 50th cap against you, he's missed 6 or 7 games since he made his debut, and I think, you know, a couple of those were through injury, I think one was through suspension, so he's pretty much an ever-present, you know, when he's available, when he's fit, and the sad thing is that Collins is not far off 50 caps, but the two of them as a pairing haven't played that often together. So for their cumulative sort of, you know, 95, almost 100 caps, I don't know the exact figures, but they probably played together maybe a dozen times, no more than 15 times. I'd be almost certain of that. And I think that's really, really disappointing, because they're both Premier League quality. Collins has had a long Premier League career, and has put in some, you know, monumental performances for us. He has this reputation as being a little bit calamitous and a bit error prone, a bit reckless, which there has been occasions when he's let us down in that regard, but when he's got his head area in the right space, he can be a really, really good centre half, and he was very comfortable all day. But his performance is going to be remembered for that miss, of course, but that was unfortunate. I mean, the other thing then I think that we were wondering was whether, you know, is Gutman under pressure now? Because you've alluded to a feeling that he made maybe the wrong selection team-wise, maybe tactically as well. Didn't get anything from the Belgian game either, although Baps was a little bit unlucky. What are the pair of games done for him now? You know, the media, the fans, are they on his back a little bit or what?
Absolutely. I mean, it was one of those things where, on, you know, on Saturday night at 7:30, we were in first place. You know, Belgium hadn't played, I think it was, and Cyprus yet. You know, we were in first place. We were very confident, and everything was great. And then we lose that game, and it's like, it's okay. If we get a good result against Belgium, it'll be like nothing happened. Then we lose to Belgium, and suddenly we find ourselves in third place with 9 points. Both your squads have 11 points, which, you know, at the end of the day, if you would have probably asked our manager at the beginning of that campaign, would you be okay with Wales and Belgium having 11 and us having 9? I'm sure he would have said yes. But because we started with 9, I don't think we ever expected to be Bosnia. Not that we didn't expect to be Bosnia, but, you know, I think a huge thing, there are two major things in that, and I know I'm going a little off topic, but I'll do it quickly, is that, and I think this is for everyone in the group, without Edin Dzeko, that team is like a completely different team. The identity, the midfield doesn't know what to do as much. They also had their striker from Stuttgart. I'm blanking on his name. I'll look it up right now. Without those two guys in the lineup, I know they have Pranic from Roma, who's very, very good. But he's not a guy who scores a lot of goals. So they needed that goal guy. And without Dzeko, they're a completely different team. They also, at the time, you know, I spoke with a lot of the Bosnian journalists, and they said to me, no one on our country, you know, even nevertheless, the team wants this manager. And then after Israel beat Bosnia very easily, he was sacked the next day. They have a new manager. Everyone's happy. Yeah. So that's that. Once we won that game, I think everyone said, well, hey, if we can beat Bosnia so easily, we should be able to beat Wales and get a point from Belgium, meaning we'd have 13 points, which would mean, you know, all we have to do is beat Andorra and Cyprus, and we're in the Euro. But now it's going to be much harder. Unfortunately for us, we already had all our big games at home, meaning Wales, Bosnia, Belgium. So we have to go to Cardiff, Zenica, and Brussels, which all three of them are very, 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 very hard places to play. You could even argue that, you know, going to Bosnia could be the hardest just because of the fans there. I mean, I don't know if you saw the coverage of their fans this past weekend. They had 20,000 fans go to Austria.
Yeah.
Some of their ultras were singing in the streets at a pro-Palestinian protest, death to Jews, which obviously I'm not trying to get political here, but I'm just trying to explain to your listeners that that's not a good thing for Israeli players and fans who are making the trip there. You know, that's not something you want to hear.
I can imagine. I think, certainly the way they've, you know, collapsed and their campaign's been, you know, pretty dismal, I think has helped. It's probably helped Wales and Israel. I think the way we're looking at it, and certainly this is my view, I think they can, I don't think they can qualify themselves, but I think they can really dictate who else does, if that makes sense. So I think if they were to beat Israel, possibly makes it really difficult for Israel. If they were to beat us when we go over there, then, you know, that makes things difficult for us as well. But, you know, we've got the win in Israel, we've got the away point in Belgium. So for us, we're probably, you know, above or below par, whichever you want to put it, in terms of what points we'd expect at this stage in the campaign. So we're confident, and I think this confidence doesn't tend to rest well with Welsh football fans. I mean, it's rare that we're in this sort of position, but it's enjoyable, it's fun. It was a really strange weekend in terms of the Israel game. It to go so well, to go to plan. Your big players played well. We'd spoken about Ramsey needing to have a big game in a more creating and more offensive way. And he was really, really good. It was great that he scored as well. I think that meant a lot to him because he lost his nan earlier in the week. So it just all came together for us. And as I said, we felt it was really, really comfortable. I think the big thing for us now is, you know, Belgium are coming to Cardiff now in June. Having seen both of those sides up close in Israel, I'd be keen and curious, how do you think that might play out, the Wales-Belgium game?
Well, let me tell you this. I'm very, very excited for that match. Obviously, I know you guys are all too, but even as an Israel, you know, supporter and journalist or whatever, that match is very, very fun. And if I'm not in Bosnia, which I still don't know if I'm going to be going to Bosnia because of some of the things I mentioned, the people chanting death to Israel, you know, maybe it's not the best time to go, but I would love to go to that match. I mean, I'm an international romantic. I've never been, you know, if it was for me going to the Champions League semifinal, which will probably be around that time, or going to Belgium-Wales, I'd way rather go to Belgium-Wales. I love the international. I love the supporters. I think, you know, I'm not just saying this because I've developed a nice relationship with you guys on your podcast and a lot of great Wales fans on Twitter and some that I met at the stadium, but you guys are very special fans. And I've met a lot of fans over the years covering the national team. And, you know, a lot of them were very cool, or the ultras were very funny, but there was something very powerful about seeing, you know, the 1,000 Wales fans in the corner making more noise than the 30,000 Israelis most of the match, even when the Israel squad, you know, had a good chance to score or so on and so forth. And I can't imagine what it's going to be like with all of you in a home stadium, because I'll tell you what, the Belgian fans, you know, Belgium is a big country, not a big country, I guess, the same size as Israel, but 9 million people, 10 million people bigger than Israel. And their fans that came were not very loud. I think it was a quarter of the size of the fans that you brought. And I think it's going to be a very, very, very amazing game. And I hate to say it because it's not maybe the best thing you want to hear, but in terms of my heart, I obviously want you to win. But in terms of Israel, I want Belgium to win, because I just think if Belgium can win, you know, the rest of their group, what I'm trying to say is I'd rather compete with Wales for second place than with Belgium, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I think before your game with Belgium last week, a lot of Welsh fans were hoping again for Belgium to win so that they, you know, run away with the the group. Yeah, and it's, you know, it's a sort of fighting out second place with, you know, yourselves, you know, possibly Bosnia. So no, that's perfectly understandable. And I know, I mean, it's very, very, very kind words from you about the Welsh sort of fans. And, you know, a lot of those fans will have, you know, followed Wales an awful lot. And, you know, it's been fairly slim pickings over the years, you know. I mean, I've in all the games I've seen Wales play away, which is not a huge number, but I've never even seen us score. So, you know, you go away in more hope than expectation. And you want to go and see other countries. You want to meet people from those countries. People spoke very highly of the hospitality they received in Israel. You know, a lot of places that, you know, people had only ever seen on the news, in the papers, to go and visit and spend some time in. And people spoke very, very highly of the trip generally. And I think they would have done had we even lost. Right. That we got a result. And I think as well, the way in which we got that result, the manner how the game panned out, I think made it all really sort of sum up to be a quite a special trip for people. I think a lot of fans will be speaking highly of that trip, you know, in years to come. But looking ahead to Belgium, it is a huge game. And I think we've got a friendly against Northern Ireland, I think the week before, just to keep us ticking over, because the season, the domestic season will have finished. So maybe the likes of Bale might be in Champions League action, English League playoffs. So a couple of games beyond the end of the season, maybe a cup final for Aaron Ramsey, perhaps. Maybe for Chris Gunter, Hal Robson-Kanu for Reading. Reading and Arsenal playing in the cup semis. So there's going to be a couple of players will have had a little bit longer season. But from our point of view, you'll have a game against Northern Ireland. I wouldn't expect Bale to play. Ramsey maybe a half. I can see us maybe trying a couple of fringe players out, but just keep us ticking over, keep us in a routine, have a really good camp together. That camp could possibly be as long as a fortnight. And I can see us going into that Belgian game, final game of the season. You know, they're going to have their holidays and, you know, a few weeks off and all the rest of it. And I can see us throwing everything at them. And I hope that Coleman goes with a very positive mindset, because I think if we lose, it still means that scenario whereby Belgium just romp away with the group happens. It's almost as if there's very little riding on this for us. I mean, great to beat them, don't get me wrong, but we've always felt second place is perhaps the one to aim for. So if Belgium win, we're still only aiming for second place. And I can see us just throwing everything at them. And I really hope that we really give them a game, because the last time we played them in Belgium, played them in Cardiff, because we had Belgium in the last qualifying campaign, it was the opening fixture. Joe Allen was ill just before kickoff. I think we were missing Ramsey as well because of injury. James Collins got sent off after about 25 minutes. They scored from two set pieces and were comfortable. And, you know, right from the word go, we were on the back foot for that campaign. So we owe them in that respect. But they've not seen the best of us in Cardiff. We've drawn the two times we went away there. Backs to the wall effort, defensive efforts, but drilled, well organised, offered a little bit of a threat in both games as well. But in terms of an attacking threat, us, you know, at our best, they've not seen us. yet, and I really just hope that we're assertive, we're confident, and that we go for them, because I don't think they're a great side. They're a very good side. They've got a lot of depth. They've got a lot of players to choose from, but I wouldn't say they're a great side. I mean, they're not a Germany. They're not a Holland. They're not a France, Spain. Those sort of sides.
I'll tell you what, I think when they click, do actually deep down believe they are a Holland, a German. I mean, look how much Holland is struggling right now in the Euros. They're off to a dismal start. And the thing with this Belgian team, and it was funny, this journalist who, you know, is known as one of the old timers in the Israeli, you know, press corps. And he's probably been to the national team matches since 1980, 1975. He turned over to me in the Belgian game and said, you know what, Rafael, you're a younger journalist, so you wouldn't know. But he said, this Belgian team is the best team that I've seen in Israel since Diego Maradona's Argentina.
Okay.
So, I mean, I do agree with a lot of what you said, but I do think that when this Belgian team, I don't want to say clicks, but when they really play their best football, I do think they are a top, one of the top three. I think they are better than Spain. I do think they're better than Netherlands, better than Germany. Obviously, no, Germany has that title and will for a while. But you look at a type of team where you literally have every single type of player coming off the bench, whether it's a strong defender. Like, let's say Courtois, for example, gets injured. You still have Mignolet. Yeah, he has a lot of, people complain about him at Liverpool and stuff, but he still is the first keeper at Liverpool, and he's your backup.
My theory's been with Belgium is that a lot of the players are familiar to people in Britain because a lot of them play in the English Premier League. And I think that familiarity, I think, has bred, certainly within the British and the English press, has bred a sense of them perhaps being better than they are because they're familiar with them.
They do have guys like De Bruyne and Alex Witzel, who, unless you watch, the Bundesliga or the Russian League, which I'm sure a lot of Welsh people don't watch the Russian League just because I don't think you have a player there. He plays on Zenit, which is a multi-million dollar team that I think could, you've seen in the Champions League, they could go head-to-head with everyone. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, I agree. No, I mean, I was going to make the point about, I think the English press, Belgium came over 3 years ago, it might have been, and they won at Wembley, and they beat England, and they beat them fairly comfortably. And I think people thought, wow, this is a young side. We know a few of their players. They're on the fringes, on the periphery of first-team squads in England. And I think it's just bred this sense of, wow, this is a great side. But you talk about when they click or when they gel, when they get that game together. But we've been saying that now for a year, 18 months. They grind out results. And for me, I think it's interesting you talk about Witzel and De Bruyne. I think they are their two most effective players. Hazard is clearly the better player, world-class player. But in the three games we've played them, as I said, we've got a bit of recent history with them, he hasn't threatened. He's had a lot of the ball. He's looked extremely comfortable. He's very technically gifted. He's bringing other players into the game. But he hasn't really threatened us. And as I said, in the first of those three games we've played against them, they had a man advantage after 25 minutes. And he was stuck out on the left. And he keeps you on your toes, don't get me wrong. But he hasn't hurt us. And I think back to that World Cup, was it the quarterfinal they had? They needed to win. And Wilmots, the coach, takes Hazard off. Well, when you're in a World Cup quarterfinal, you need to win. You need to score. I thought it very strange that he then takes off his most, but by general consensus, the most gifted, their best player, their playmaker. And I think there is some question marks as to whether Wilmots truly trusts him. I wonder, I don't think Hazard will win. I mean, this may come back to haunt me. If Belgium win in Cardiff, I don't think it'll be Hazard who's winning that for them. I think it will be one of the strikers, or it'll be De Bruyne, or it'll be Witzel. And De Bruyne scored against us not in the last game we played in Belgium, but the game previous in the other campaign. And I think Witzel and De Bruyne are their most effective players. And I think that they are not technical, gifted, skillful players in the sense of Hazard or a Bale or a Ramsey. I think almost personifies how Belgium are playing. They're grinding out results. They're very well organised. They're very well disciplined. They don't pick up many yellow cards. And, I think they can go through the gears, build up pressure, and that eventually tells. But other than Cyprus the other week, they're not really sort of putting sides, you know, 3-4, 5-0 to the sword that often. So, you know, this all sounds like we're incredibly confident, quite cocky, and we're not. You know, it's going to be a tough game. But I think, you know, when you look at the two sides, clearly the better side, and they've got a lot of options, they've got a lot of strength and depth. But what I don't think they have is a threat like Bale. And we may not have any number of threats like they have. We haven't got, I mean, I would kill for any of their strikers. You know, we're very, very, you know, weak up front. You know, Sam Vokes has just come back from long-term injury, played well against you when he came on. But, you know, I would take any number of their strikers over ours. But none of them, of the Belgian players, are a threat in the same way that Bale is. And, you know, like Portugal are with Ronaldo and Romania were with Hagi and Bulgaria were with Stoichkov back in the day, when you've got that threat, you just hope that it's on song for that game. And if he stays fit between now and that game, I can see him having a big, big finale to the season. If he plays in both games, if he plays in the friendly, which I don't think he will, but also Belgium, the Belgium game will be his 50th cap as well, Bale. So there'll be a little bit of something potentially special riding in on that. Maybe he'll get 10 minute run out against Northern Ireland, picks up his 49th, and it means he can start in the Belgium game with that 50th. But a few other things riding on that game as well, not just the points.
Yeah, and if you don't mind me commenting a few of the things you said, interesting. Belgium has a friendly against France, which I think will be I don't know who they're gonna play, you know, who Belgium's gonna play. But the thing that Belgium had a lot of injuries in this international break, and if some of those guys can come back, I'm talking about Lukaku, who I think is an important player. Or, I mean, even a guy like Thomas Vermaelen, who everyone obviously remembers from being so good at Arsenal and just having terrible injuries since he signed at Barcelona. He apparently is starting to practice with the team, and he was there starting in the World Cup, and there's a good chance he'll be back for your match. What is so interesting about them is they almost have too many players to pick from that sometimes I'm not sure Wilmots knows who his best 11 is, because you look at his strikers, and I mean, whether it's, I always mispronounce this guy's name, but Batshuayi, who's been amazing for Marseille. I mean, if you talk to people in France, they'll say he's been, you know, the player that Marseille's been looking for years. And he came over from Standard, but he's been fantastic. He's only 21, and he's, you know, started in some big games for Belgium. I think he even started in so I'm blanking on it, but also Orgi from Liverpool, who's in Lille. Again, these guys are 21, 19 years old. And then, obviously, we know about Lukaku. We know about Benteke. Name one other country in the world that has four promising under 23 or 24-year-olds. And that's not even including Hazard. You know, some people say is, you know, an attacking mid or whatever, a forward, whatever you want to call him. But that's not even including him. And, you know, a guy like Chadli came on as a substitute. And he's a guy who, you know, everyone's like, oh, okay, he's a very solid player. But he's a guy, I think, who scored something like 10 goals this year for Spurs in the Premier League, which a lot of players would be happy to do that as midfielders. I look at the team, and when everything's really – I use the word clicking, which I guess is cliche, but when everything's going really well, the team is unbelievable. If anything, their weakness right now is their defense, and their defense is pretty solid. But that's – if you look at positions – you know, goalkeeping, Courtois, world class. Midfield is absolutely loaded, and so are the forwards. But the defense is a bit shaky, and I think a lot of people noticed that in the Israel match, just because Vincent Kompany, you know, hasn't been fantastic at City. You could say a guy like Toby Alderweireld, who's been very good at Southampton, is good, but he's not, you know, like the other players. He's not a great defender. Nicolas Lamberts is, I think, probably one of their best guys, and he doesn't even play in a big league. And then you have other guys who play at Anderlecht, MLS, and Celtic, which compared to all the other names on the team, you know, those are small, you know, small places. Still, Anderlecht are a powerhouse in Belgium, and Celtic are obviously a powerhouse in Scotland, and the Impact are in a, you know, budding and growing MLS. But that's not the type of of squad that you have with forwards and the midfielder. So I think, like you said, if Gareth Bale has one of those nights where you just know he's you know, basically an Israel night, we can call it now, you can win. If Israel can, you know, play a really good match, then why can't you win at home with your fans? Obviously, if Gareth Bale doesn't show up and is tired or you know, goes through another bout of criticism from, you know, Real Madrid in the press, maybe that'll be a problem. But if he shows up and you give it your all, you can win. And if you win, that really changes the group, because then I basically see you as automatically in second place. Belgium probably in first place, but if not second place, and then us in third place. If you win this match, I think it might be the most important match of the whole group for the following reason, because if Belgium loses that match, they will do everything in their power to win the next four. Whereas I think if Belgium wins your match and then you stumble again and lose, Belgium can afford to, you know, not give it their all. And I know that sounds a bit weird, but people said if Belgium came into Israel not needing 3 points, you know, way ahead if you look at some of the other groups, you can see that the teams in first place are way ahead. You know, maybe it'd be different, but Belgium had to win. And I think if you beat Belgium, it just changes the whole group, because then Belgium says, okay, you know, we have to win the rest of our games. And then there's a really interesting battle between us, Bosnia and Cyprus, which I really don't think people should count out. Like, and I don't say this again to be disrespectful to you guys, but I don't know if you've gone to Cyprus yet.
No, I think we've lost our last two visits there, one in a qualifier, one in a friendly. We're there in early September, September the 3rd, I'm looking at the fixtures right here. I think we're fully aware of that because of our own particular history with Cyprus lately, but also in light of the way the campaign has gone, you know, Cyprus rolling over Bosnia, yourselves beating Bosnia, us nicking a point off Belgium away. So I think it's been that sort of group. So I don't think any of the fixtures you're looking at, other than probably the ones with Andorra, you're looking at and thinking, okay, well, there's an absolute banker guarantee. Know how that's going to go. You know, you can see Bosnia maybe getting a point in Belgium in September, which, you know, pegs Belgium back, maybe keeps Bosnia in the hunt. It's a fascinating group. It really is.
I think it's the best group by far. In Europe. I mean, I don't think there's anything close to it, because I think the fact that you have a team like Cyprus, who I think would be fair to say on terms of talent is the fourth best team, but they could easily get a good result against all those teams.
Yes.
Even Belgium at home, that it would, they could get a shocking point. They're not going to win, but and I think that just makes our group just so exciting. And you know, I think it is going to come down to what is September the last round, or is there stuff in October?
October as well, because we finish with Andorra at home. I remember saying at the very outset of this group, before it even started, when we were doing one of our podcasts, that the run of fixtures that we had was really, really good for us. Yeah. You had basically that insurance policy at the end of Andorra at home.
The opposite.
Yeah, you. I don't envy your running. I've got to be honest. Looking at these,
then,
so
if we go into that last match with having to win 3 points, and for those who don't know, we have to play Belgium in Brussels.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think you're very lucky. You have that situation where it might be okay if you get 3 points, you wrap up second place, or even let's say third, you know, I don't think third place, but second place, and all you have to do is beat Andorra, which you should be able to do. I remember you struggled the first game.
But... Yeah. Again, further proof that we are slow starters in the season. And as I said, I think looking at these fixtures, we play on the 6th of September, having played away in Cyprus on the 3rd. So it could be that the Cyprus game is the one that we're going to be a bit rusty for. I don't know what plans there are for any other friendlies. I'm not sure if there is any scope to have them. I think, as I said, I think that August date has been done away with. So, you know, we'll be going into that not in top nick. You know, we won't be in a groove, I'm pretty certain of that, because we as I said, we very rarely ever are. But we'll have at least got that game out of the way before we then face yourselves on the 6th in Cardiff. But I'm sure I probably speak for a lot of Welsh fans who've had a lot of contact with you on social media, who met up with you in Israel as well. I'm sure a lot of people will be looking forward to welcoming you and other fans from Israel to Cardiff.
Really?
And likewise ourselves, we'll be doing something by way of a podcast, you know, around those pair of games. I'm sure we can do something maybe specifically for the Israel as well, Israel game as well. So it'd be great to catch up with you, finally meet you as well. And it's as you say, it's proving an interesting group, an interesting campaign. So best of luck in Bosnia.
We're going to need it.
Well, I mean, in every sense, it's not nice hearing some of the things that were being said by some of their fans. I wasn't aware of that. So, you know, hopefully all is well, both and off the pitch there. I'm not too sure how I want that one to pan out, that game. I think my general feeling as well is if we can keep Bosnia out of it, then that's for the best. But of course, you know, if you were to win there, it brings you right back in it. So I think I'd probably, in terms of the group, I'd probably settle for a draw in that fixture, I think.
Yeah, that would be bad for us. We're going to be going for a clear 3 points.
We need to win.
Yeah, we have to win, because if suddenly, you know, if we lose that and then you do beat Belgium, then I can tell it's over. First and second place is over. Then it's just a battle for third. And
I think our group, though, has been so nip and tuck, as it were, people taking points off each other, that there's probably not going to be a third place qualifier from our group qualifying by rights. I would be surprised, because I think they won't have accrued enough points, because we're each taking points, nicking points off each other. So I would imagine that would come from another group. But you look at a side like you mentioned, Holland struggling early, and you know, indeed they are. They possibly are going to be in the playoffs. And I think when you look at that, you know, we fell foul of the playoffs sort of 10 years ago for European Championships. We lost to Russia. You know, sometimes you can find a big team in the playoffs. And, you know, you don't want to be drawing them. So I think the way it's going with a couple of the groups, if you look at the Germany, Ireland, Scotland group as well, you know, there's going to be a tough team there in the playoffs. I think the way we look at it, I think it's better off qualifying by right. And I think the way we're looking at it, the way it's gone, you know, we're confident, I think, irrespective of how it goes against Belgium, that actually second is what you need to be going for. I don't think we'd want a playoff. If we ended up in a playoff at the end of this group, I think we would be really, really disappointed, which is, again, very, very similar to how we ended up in the playoffs against Russia 10 years ago. So
I think it's going to be very fun the rest of the way. Like I said, I've really enjoyed talking, obviously, to you guys, definitely, but to everyone. And also, I was honored to be in this really great BBC Wales production, The Myth of 58. I don't know if you heard it.
I did.
But, you know, I didn't realize how amazing it was going to be. I thought they just wanted me to just give an Israel perspective. But, you know, I remember pressing play and just being amazed that I just spent 50 minutes listening to a BBC Wales thing. Because, you know, I would never do that. Just like you would never listen to our local.
Yeah.
But it was so well done. And the music, and I think it was something like 52 minutes. And it was amazing. I was very, very proud to be a part of that. So I think both of our countries have a lot in common. You know, we've been through a lot of what you've been through, and always getting very close, being in the playoffs. We were in a playoff in 2000 against Austria, and we ended up losing. So we have a lot in common. And I think, you know, in conclusion, I think really the best thing that could happen for both of our countries is if for some reason both make it and have not go to a playoff. Because you said it, I mean, there's going to be a team like, you know, Poland, good teams, and good teams that are going to come in third place that no one will want to face. And I think it'd be best to just qualify automatically. But I think still third place is still okay. I'm looking right now, Netherlands, Ukraine, Scotland, Switzerland, Hungary, Russia, Norway, Albania. These are the best third place teams.
But as you say, you know, there's some tough fixtures in that list of countries you mentioned there. Some of whom,
Switzerland.
Yeah, and some of whom are very strong at home as well. So you know, the risk is, okay, you've got two legs, but the risk is you could be 2-3-0 down after the first leg or the away leg, and you know, it makes the home game, you know, redundant in some respects. So the qualifying has always been fairly brutal. I mean, it's, you know, I suppose that's what you want, because when it comes to the actual competition, the actual championships themselves, we all sit down, we all watch the games, and you want to see the best players, you want to see you know, competitive games. You don't want to see mismatches. You know, that's what we want as viewers, as football fans. You know, with a slightly sort of bias take on that. That's why I think we probably. Certainly players like Gareth Bale deserve to go. You know, he deserves to grace that stage. We've had some terrific genuinely world-class players over the years. Giggs, Neville Southall, Ian Rush, Mark Hughes, and they didn't get to qualify. They didn't grace that stage. So we hope, obviously, you always hope. We never expect. But you know, we are quietly confident that there is something happening here. Credit to Chris Coleman. I mentioned him at the start. He got that game, you know, spot on. He's improved as the campaign has gone on in terms of tactics. He seems much bolder, much more confident in his dealings with the press. And he's changing a lot of people's minds, because this time last year, there was some doubt as to whether he was going to be sticking around, whether he was going to sign a new contract, things like that. And it was an unnecessary distraction, because we still had Bale, Ramsey, Allen, Ashley Williams. We still had these players. But it wasn't quite happening. Well, a little bit more than a year ago, sorry, there was those doubts, to be fair. But in the sort of 15, 16 months since then, we've lost just one game. And, you know, we are looking confident. And we go and put in a performance like we did in Tel Aviv. We know that sort of performance has been within us. So it was great to actually see it finally. And I think, you know, fair play, a lot of credit goes to Coleman and his team, because they seem to get the preparation absolutely spot on. And we've been critical of him on our podcast. So here and now, for the record, all credit to him, all credit to the coaching staff. They did very well in Tel Aviv. So, yeah, credit there. It's on the record, finally. Yeah. It's been lovely speaking to you. I have to fly now. It's Easter break for us, so I'm away.
Happy Easter.
Happy Easter, yeah. I think you've had... Was it Passover you said, I think?
Yeah, we just had Passover.
Right, so, okay.
Yeah, there's some exciting things going on domestically. I don't know if you heard about the Palestine trying to expel Israel from FIFA.
Yes,
causing... it's, you know, for me, it gives me a lot of work, because it's like a thing that people care about abroad, so it gives me some opportunity. But it's obviously, hopefully, you know, it doesn't happen.
No, obviously, obviously.
Everything's good, and thank you again, and... You know, stay in touch and have a good holiday, and we'll talk very soon.
Likewise, Raphael. It's been a pleasure. Take care.
Have a good day.
Bye. Cheers. Bye.